Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Rewind. I'm your host, Travis.
Hey, I'm Chris.
Hey, all right, so we are back, kicking a little old school.
I forgot what this felt like.
Yeah, man. listen, like, lately, you know, we've been doing everything through YouTube. We've been just recording video, and then I'll just, like, in post, I'll just take the audio and throw it out on Podbean. And for our audio listeners, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
until I made up the comment that we look ugly on YouTube, and you're like, you know what? Yeah. We need to go back to podcast.
Yeah. And you forgot the webcam. So I figured, you know what? Let's go back to our roots here. Let's go audio only. What are you doing, man?
Fucking Bumblebee is not cooperating with me. God damn it. Oh, yeah. Hey, so I'm playing with a Transformer here. One of yours in his bot.
Why are we playing with Transformers?
Because that's what we're talking about today, man.
Yeah.
The gift that doesn't stop giving. The Last Knight's coming to theaters very soon. And we're trying to build our hopes up so that we can spend money on this movie by dissecting the other four.
This is the one episode that I said I would never do.
Why?
It's Michael Bay's movies. It's the Bayverse. It's the Bayformers. Whatever you want to call it. It's the one that... Okay, put that down.
God damn it.
All right, so it's... What's some redeeming qualities of these Michael Bay films that have been coming out? And I couldn't... You know, initially I was like, I don't want to just be shitting all over these movies for however long, you know?
Before the Transformers movie-verse came along, were there Michael Bay movies that you liked?
Yeah. I used to like Michael Bay. I mean, we're talking Bad Boys, The Rock, to a certain extent, Armageddon, and then
Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor was like you could start to see some of the mannerisms and the Bayisms, if you will, mm-hmm. in that movie. But yeah, back in the mid-90s, yeah, Michael Bay. If you said that, hey, Michael Bay's in this movie, you're gonna check it out.
Mm-hmm.
Until it became almost like a parody of himself of mm-hmm. these movies, but I digress. This is gonna be here's what we're doing in this episode. And this one, like you just mentioned a little while ago, Transformers: The Last Knight, the fifth installment of the Bayverse, these Transformer mm-hmm. movies, that's coming out next month. And we said, you know what, I want to do some kind of
preview special,
something for that, but. But maybe I'll talk about the Bayverse movies, you know. I've talked about, you know, the old classic stuff. I've talked about some Beast Wars. I've talked about some other stuff in the Transformers
Prime.
Yeah,
cartoons,
yeah. We've talked about all this. This is like the last remnant of Transformer-isms or mm-hmm. Transformer franchise stuff that we haven't really deep dived into on this show. And I was like, okay, well, what can we do? So I was thinking, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a look. I'm doing air quotes briefly at the previous four movies. But what we're going to do is we're not going to recap all of them or anything. What we're just going to do is we're going to do two or three pros of the movies and two or three cons of the movies. We're going to do back and forth.
I think this was a running joke I had between us. Like, there has to be something good about these Transformers movies. I can't just like watch them. Somehow this came up between us. Like, you know what? That sounds like homework, and that became, oh, great, the new Transformers movie's coming. Let's finally turn in our work.
Yeah. So I figure now is as good a time as any to, like I said, we're just going to do a couple pros, a couple cons,
mm-hmm.
and that's pretty much it. And then when we're done with all of this, we're going to rank them mm-hmm. on our personal picks. Like, how would I rank them, and how would you rank them yeah. as far as from best to worst? And then... We'll give our little opening thoughts on The Last Knight from what we've seen so far, you know, and then that's going to be the show right there. But yeah. Before we get into that, if you haven't already, check us out on iTunes, Podbean, wherever you go to get your audio podcast, Pop Culture Rewind. Also on YouTube, and that's where our exclusive video content is. Go there, subscribe to that
whenever
channel.
You don't violate copyrights.
That's between me and YouTube's lawyers. So, there's
Universal.
That. And also on, social media, facebook.com/popculturerewind, and also on Twitter.
On the Twitter machine, popculture RWND.
There you go.
You couldn't afford all the vowels.
There you go. So, all right. Yeah. So, with that being said, let's get right into this because there's quite a few stuff to talk about.
Even before you insert Michael Bay in the picture.
Right.
because we have our favorites of Michael Bay, and we have stuff that we don't like about him.
Yeah.
2005, 2004, that's around the time where Hollywood runs out of original ideas and start digging in the well of established franchises.
Well, it's been going on longer than that. But,
yeah.
But yeah, good.
Transformers, no matter who was going to helm it, it had huge shoes to fill, because when, even with four movies down and the fifth one coming, when you tell me, dude, your favorite Transformers movie, I'm going back to 1986.
Yeah,
I'm going back to when this boy became a man and started crying man tears for the death of Optimus Prime,
right,
fading
right.
to gray.
Yeah,
it was like, oh shit. So that's for us as kids growing up, we hold that as a masterpiece, like on a personal level and just on an artistic movie level.
Right,
it's hard to top that.
Oh,
so
I agree. Yeah.
The trailer for the, I remember I somehow was with a group of friends watching the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and there was this trailer for a new movie where there's a spaceship went into Mars and the little rover was crawling around.
The little teaser.
And,
yeah,
there's this huge robot that like and destroys it. And then all of a sudden this huge block starts shifting shape. And at the end, like, I'm already getting goosebumps thinking about it. At the end it said Transformers.
Yeah.
I was like, fuck, this is the best $7 I ever spent. I slept through that Pirates of the Caribbean movie. I don't care. All I remember was the trailer. I was like, I didn't. And this was before like people really dove into the internet. Before it was like so easily accessible.
Well, social media.
Yeah, right. Everything. Like, and people behind the scenes, like, having sites breaking down the dirt. It's like, holy crap, there's a new Transformers movie? I'm ready.
Yeah, just to touch on what you're saying, yeah, it's Michael Bay notwithstanding. Like you're saying, it didn't matter who took it over. And we'll play devil's advocate for Michael Bay for right now anyways. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the details of some of these other movies. But no matter who took it over, to take a franchise of talking, transforming robots, I could see how that could be an issue for any kind of director or filmmaker to do. Because it's a lot of CGI, it's a lot of...
Suspending disbelief to make it work.
Yeah. And then you're not only that, but you're taking into consideration the fan base, the loyal fan base who've been with them since 1984. Yeah. You know, and some of those same people that hold the 1986 animated movie in such a high regard, yeah, those are big shoes to fill, and the bar was set really high from jump. Before you even start writing a script for a movie, mm-hmm. you got to think, okay, this is a big established franchise. A lot of people are going to be
critical.
Yeah.
It's an understatement. Critical is an understatement.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
And this is one of those things where damned if you do, damned if you don't. You can't mm-hmm. appease everybody, and I'm sure if you get a group of like 10 people in a room, half of them are going to like the movies, half of them are going to hate the movies. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably not going to be any in between. But they do good enough. They make more money year after year.
Yeah.
So it's not like nobody's seen the movies. You know, they're
especially now that the global market's becoming a huge income for revenue
that's a good point too.
You would have normally wouldn't have noticed when the first movie came out.
Right. And and we're going to get to that when we talk about the fourth movie.
Oh.
That was when it really kicked in high gear. Uh-huh. But anyway. All right. So, let's get this going here. All right. So, you were mentioning 2004, 2005. All right. That's the build up and everything. Or that's when everything's starting to come together. But mm-hmm. 2007 was the release of Transformers.
Mm.
And
how many times did you watch that movie at the theater?
Twice? One in the regular theater, and then one when they brought it back on IMAX because they added... They said new footage, but it was like you blink and you missed it type stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's... Come on now. It was special seeing that on the screen. And even before then, like the trailers for it, like you were saying, the rover... Besides that, but when you get into the trailers and you hear the trailer voiceover guy, talking about this and that, and you hear the sound effects, you start seeing Autobots, Decepticons, the words, Transformers, Autobots, Decepticons, the symbols, stuff like that you didn't think you'd see on a movie screen, and you're seeing it. And then, not only that, it's Michael Bay's directing it, and it's produced by Steven Spielberg.
At the time, we didn't know where this was going. We just saw the names.
Right.
We knew what they could do.
Right.
They're in charge of this. And like, okay. We gave them, like, the benefit of the doubt was, like, huge.
Now, the first movie was actually written by Robert Orsi and Alex Kurtzman.
Mm-hmm.
They're a team that's been together. They've worked on a lot of things. I know
they were the first two Transformers movies, and then they split to do Star Trek, right?
Yeah, something happened because part two was the whole writer's strike, mm-hmm. and that's when it kind of fell apart on there. But yeah, this one, they're the two writers on this one. And they've done some other things like Alias, the TV show Alias, and, mm-hmm. and they
were a part of Transformers Prime, right?
Yes. Yeah, if you watch Transformers Prime, which I think came out after mm-hmm. this first movie, yeah, it's created for television, I think, for them. But it's a really good writing team, and I think since then they've actually split. But for a while, they're the early 2000s.
They were it.
Yeah, that was a really good writing team to get for this movie. That plus Michael Bay, Steven Spielberg, so this had all the ingredients.
Yeah.
And then, let's get right into it because. Like I said before, what we're going to do is we're not going to recap the whole movies, but we're just going to say what are some things that we loved about the movie and some things we just couldn't stand about the movie.
So let's start positive. What's the first thing you loved about this movie?
All right. On this one, I'm just going to say flat out, and you might agree with me on this one, just seeing and hearing the Transformers on the screen, Optimus Prime's voice. Peter Cullen. They brought in Peter Cullen to do Optimus Prime's voice. Mm-hmm. Hearing it wasn't like the Transformer sounds that we're used to hearing, although they Easter egged him a couple times throughout the series. The very first Transformer, matter of fact, he had the
sound when I sat in the theater and I saw the helicopter landing on the base in Qatar, and I was like, oh great, wait a minute. And then it lands and the propellers stop and they bend back and you hear the old school Transformer sound when he's like going through the motions. Already I sat back, I was like, all right, this is $70 well spent. I saw this movie 8 times at the theater. The first one was on IMAX. You have that Decepticon shirt your way right now from the movie. I have an Autobots poster version of it, and I had all 8 of my ticket stubs surrounding it. Like I was.
Now, when I think of the seeing, the hearing Transformers aspect of it, one scene in particular that that really resonates with me on that aspect is the alley scene, the back alley scene where. Bumblebee takes the humans to meet up with the rest of them, right?
Yeah.
And this is our introduction
to everyone.
To Optimus, to Jazz,
Ratchet, Ironhide.
Yeah, all of them. And just hearing Optimus in his old voice breaking down who everybody is, it was a good like fanboy moment, you know.
It looks new, but it feels familiar.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, yeah. So yeah, that's one thing for me. What about you?
That's on the top of my list is the presentation from the beginning, the sounds, the transformation, Bumblebee being the guardian for the humans.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention, growing up as a kid, I always wanted a Camaro.
No,
I owned my dad's for a couple of years. So the initial fanboy reaction of, oh my god, it's not a Volkswagen, the right. Bumblebee's a... Even if they like mentioned it in the movie, we had the old beat up buggy next to the
old
69.
It was acknowledged,
the passing of the torch kind of.
Yeah.
Dude, that transformation into the 05 concept car. Your concept car.
Yeah.
Like this was not a legit car that you can leave the theater right now and go across the street to like the Chevy dealership and buy.
Right.
This was the car that damn near saved General Motors.
Yeah. Did this movie help?
Between, oh hell yeah. Between this car and that ignited the whole muscle car war again, against Ford, against the Mustang, and that brought the Challenger back from the death for Dodge. So those three, this movie, I bet, was the spark that got
catalyst.
That fire going. Oh, of course.
Catalyst.
Dude, how many kids did not want a Camaro after seeing that movie?
Right.
Shit, I wanted one bad.
You know what? Since we're going to talk about concept cars and everything, that's if I want to nitpick on one thing by the whole franchise is I know where Michael Bay is coming from on this. You know, he wants to take advantage of
sponsorships, money,
sponsorships,
income,
money, and then not only
co-branding,
as a filmmaker, point of view, just to see it visually, he liked to incorporate a lot of concept cars into the scenes, which that's fine and dandy. I don't have a problem with that because they look cool, right?
Oh fuck yeah!
But Robots in Disguise, how many concept cars do you see rolling down the freeway at the same time?
It's know? L.A. There's a lot of shit there rolling down
there. Is that what happens over
L.A.?
Okay.
As someone that just came from there, yeah, I can tell you that. There's a lot of shit down there.
Well, over here in Texas, that doesn't happen a lot. So to me, if I saw that down there, I was like, hey, what the hell's going on over here?
Smells like a Transformer.
So
that's the top of my list is just the overall introduction of both the first player from each team, the Decepticon, the blackout, transforming and right. and killing the shit out of everybody at the base, and then Bumblebee showing up at the beginning.
Yeah. Now, I said seeing and hearing. Now, what I meant by that is on the hearing part of it, you know, they did have Peter Cullen in to do the voice, and it was kind of cool to hear, you know, some of his quotes like roll out till, you know, till all, what he didn't say till all are one, but he said, one shall stand, one shall fall.
And freedom's then, the right of yes. all sentient beings.
Yep. Yeah. And not only that, but there was one really good scene. It's a split second, but it's towards the end, Megatron's back. He meets up with Starscream.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Starscream's like, they whatever we didn't. And then Megatron just turns and says, you filled me yet again. Starts, I was like, oh, yes.
Hearing that, I knew that this was not the only movie. Like, yeah. I knew that there was going to be at least one more, because you can't tease stuff like that knowing that they've already had a history and not
yeah.
give it more time to let that grow. But
the fact that they took the 2 seconds to have that little bit of line yeah. dialogue of going back to me as a fanboy from the cartoons, the rivalry they've had, yeah. the back and forth between them two, the fight for power and everything was acknowledged in this movie. And that one little line of dialogue, it was so good to hear that. I kind of wish that Frank Welker, who did the voice of Megatron, was brought in,
yeah.
but they brought in Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
But he does have a good, strong, kind of gravelly voice.
Mm-hmm.
So I can think...
Because, I mean, for people that haven't known the entire lifespan of Transformers, Peter Cullen has not always been the Optimus Prime. There hasn't always been a Megatron in all these series, and even with that, Welker hasn't been the voice of Megatron, but he has several other voices, and he came in later on in the franchise timeline.
Well, Frank Welker was the original Megatron.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Cullen was the original Optimus, but yeah, throughout, you know, you have different series. You have
Transformers Animated, Robots in Disguise,
Beast Wars,
the Armada,
the 2000 series, the 2001 series, the Robots in Disguise.
Mm-hmm.
There's different voices for them too. So, yeah. But anyway, that,
he made it his own. I wasn't leaving the theater going, "Fuck, where's Welker?"
Like, yeah, no.
Yeah.
That's why I said it made sense for the movie and the tone of the movie and the way what they did with the character.
Mm-hmm.
It made sense. So. So that was mine. You kind of piggyback on my pro. Another good pro in this one for me was a specific scene that it mixed in some action and a little bit of humor, which wasn't too corny, over the top. Not as bad as it got later on in the series, but it was the desert fight with Scorponok.
Oh, yeah.
Going back, I just rewatched these, like, back to back. I rewatched all these, and that scene actually holds up compared to some of the other stuff I'm going to get to in this movie, actually. But this particular scene, it showed how hard it was
to kill more or less a Minicon as opposed to freaking straight up Decepticon. Yeah.
The kind of intensity that some of the humans are fighting with and everything, and the whole bring the rain and blew away.
My left pocket, left cheek.
Yeah, that's kind of but it's a little eye roll humor, but the whole getting on the guy on the operator and trying to get him sign up for the whatever pass it was. Anyway, so that was a good scene. What about you? Did you have another scene or something?
I would have to say, whew, nothing says Saturday morning cereal in front of the TV, like watching that last 15 minutes of Optimus Prime versus Megatron. From the very beginning, where Optimus comes out of that alley and drifts and transforms while he's drifting until he breaks out his pose and already ready to fight. And then Megatron goes, "Prime." Yeah. Even though it's new to the theater, like they're establishing that
not meeting for the first time.
Yeah, this isn't like 8 different versions of Spider-Man on the TV screen where you have to tell the origin story every fucking time. Like, we know there's a rivalry between this team and that team.
Right.
It's been there, and it's going to keep being there. And the fact that they didn't just, like, say this is the first confrontation, like, I was already ready. And just the battle between them, like, Megatron again, like, you're defending the people? What have the people ever done to you? And I was like, they have the same freedom as we do. It's like, that's why you suck. And he keeps beating the shit. But, man, it was just for the first movie, it's hard to do things brand new because people are going to expect some kind of throwback to the beginning.
Right.
So if it was Optimus against somebody else, it probably wouldn't have made sense in the first movie.
No, in the
first
movie.
It had to be Optimus versus Megatron in the first movie, and that's exactly what we got.
Yeah. And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple other pros I want to say on this one is, for all intents and purposes, it had a really good supporting cast.
Yeah.
Now, when I say that, I'm talking about Josh Jamal as Lennox, Tyrese as Epps. We had Anthony Anderson as Glenn. John Voight was in there. Even Kevin Dunn and Julia White, who played the parents.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, they were okay.
Yeah.
They were okay in this movie, but we'll get to that later.
Shia LaBeouf, pre-insanity.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about him in just a second. Bernie Mac. The late, great Bernie Mac.
What has Bernie Mac done that you don't like?
Yeah. Uncle Bobby B, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a nice supporting cast of characters in this particular movie.
Now, with that being said, was there too much focus on the cast as opposed to not enough human time? Because I think that's one of the constants about this entire franchise, is that for all the new robots that they keep bringing, they focus as much time, if not more time, on the human side element of the movie when the movie's about transforming
robots. And I think this is where like the corporations come into play, and they say, well, you can't not have any humans in here. We got to have something that we can bounce things off of, and this and that. And so, yeah, all the movies have had human characters in there, and quite a bit more so than the other ones. But this one did focus. This whole first three movies had Shia LaBeouf in there.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a con for me.
Go for it.
Actually, in this particular movie, Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox. Yeah, Megan Fox is hot. I'm not taking that away from her. She's fine. But no, the overacting by Shia LaBeouf, the non-acting by Megan Fox, it just kind of counteract each other. And there's a scene where she's like, you think I'm shallow, don't you? Yes, I do. Considering what this guy just said about how he knew her whole life, blah, 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 and she doesn't know who this guy
Will
is.
Will Kiki.
Yeah, it's like, what? But yeah, exactly. And then Shia LaBeouf's just overacting, hamming it up for the screen, and just having a nervous breakdown in damn near every scene that he's in.
Yeah.
It was too much.
Damn it, Bobby, you're a soldier now.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, geez. So there's that. And what hasn't been said about Shia LaBeouf and Megan Fox? I don't want to spend another 20 minutes talking about that. Because
that spreads along two other movies. So I'm sure we're going to cover those bases in a little bit.
Now, another thing, and this is a con. I put this down as a con, but honestly, this is kind of the fault of it being the first movie. But I'm going to say the CGI of the movie and also the designs of the characters.
Really?
The CGI, and what I mean by that is, go back and check out the fight scene between Bumblebee and Barricade. It's just a bunch of sparks flying and robots tossing around. Like, I remember watching in the theater, I was getting a headache. Because I was like, what is the hell? Okay, I guess this is cool, but I don't know. I'm just assuming. But there was things like that in the movie where it's like, what's going on? There, I think towards that final battle, there's a couple moments like that too, where it's just... The CGI, I don't think, was fully defined at that time for what they were trying to accomplish. But again, I can't harp on it. I can't fault them too much for it. I mean, it's
kind of hard at times to argue that, but there's also times you can defend it. I mean, for the certain moments that you didn't see enough CGI, dude, the CGI of Starscream when he like did the backflip to transform into jet mode when he's in downtown, that looked like damn near for real. When he first slid into the city and crashed, there's some of those CGIs for all the faults that you could find on some of the bad scenes. The good ones, good Lord, they're damn near flawless. And that's like 12 years old. That technology is 12 years old. And for them to pull off what they did then, I could let some of the bad ones go. Like the Prime drifting, there's parts of it that look kind of cartoony when they were when he started doing the transformation.
Although, to that point, a good sign of that was in the freeway. When Optimus is driving and he like skids the brakes, like he transforms. That was pretty cool. So, but the designs also, and this I think this is, it carries through for most of the franchise as far as the designs go. They've improved over the years, and I'll touch on that later. But right here, especially the first two movies, the designs, some of those rub me the wrong way. You could tell the ones they spent time on, like Optimus and Bumblebee, and even Megatron to a certain extent. But the other ones, like I hated Starscream's design when I first saw it, like the robot mode, you know, and some of the other designs. I couldn't, especially the Decepticons. And that's another con I have right here is a lack of or the choice of Decepticons they use in this first move. Yeah, we got Megatron and Starscream.
They named the tank Devastator.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we're only doing this one movie. Fuck it. That's going to be the shout out to the little fanboys.
Yeah, exactly.
Devastator was in the movie. Oh, my God. He was just a leg.
But, yeah, Blackout, Barricade, Bone Crusher. I mean, yeah. Come on. I mean, where's the classics, you know?
Where's Soundwave?
Yeah, give me all this stuff, yeah. You know? Don't give me these made-up ones. Because the Autobots, we had the classic...
We had some defined guys. Yeah. We're still missing... Dude, for all the years... Well, there's like at least 15 years of Transformers history before we even get to the first movie. There's a lot to choose from. So it's hard to get all of them crammed into the first... Especially when CGI is expensive and it's probably the main reason why you're having a lot more humans in the movie.
And I would imagine the filmmakers had the same problem... Or not problem, but dilemma from what the filmmakers of X-Men had. You know, there's a big cast of people to pick and choose from. And I would imagine maybe Transformers.
And you don't want to blow your load on the first movie if you think there's going to be possibility
for more.
We'll
get to that too here in just a minute.
Con for me, I guess this was probably the beginning that I actually noticed this in movies. I guess that's when the trend kind of started. Way too much product placement.
Oh, yeah.
Way too much. And I'd never noticed it before until...
Never?
Well, I hadn't watched movies as much back then as I do now.
That's true.
I've
given you a hard time about that before.
Yeah, you have. And for people that don't know, there's so many movies and franchises I have no idea, I've never seen. So, this was the beginning of, my golden age of movies where I would start watching a shit ton of movies all the time to catch up on old ones. And this was the first time I noticed that, holy shit, Michael Bay is putting product placement a lot in this movie.
Wasn't there a Mountain Dew Transformer?
Yeah. And the Xbox 360 box, somebody dropped it on the ground and it started killing everything.
Yeah.
And the deuce machine started shooting cans. Okay.
Oh, one last thing before we move on real quick. A little shout out to the soundtrack. I thought this had a decent soundtrack. What about you? I mean, for better or worse, I know Linkin Park, they had a nice little song for this one. It was played out throughout the movie there, but The Used, Smashing Pumpkins, Disturbed. There's a one-off song by Styles of Beyond in that soundtrack. It was a decent soundtrack. Catchy songs. Anyway, you're a music guy. I don't know.
I loved it.
Oh, okay. You're being kind of quiet.
Surprised you brought that up. Yeah. One last thing before we go on the bad, because this is the last one. We've covered pretty much everything on my
list. And this
list.
One's the most detailed one, because it's the first one. So.
Watching it even back in a couple of weeks ago when we were doing our homework. Dude, that opening chase between Bumblebee and Barricade, did it take that long? The sun was bright as fuck.
It was like the middle of the day.
Yeah, it was afternoon. And then all of a sudden, they're in the car, and we hear this badass fucking The You song, Pretty Handsome Awkward. And then before the song's over, it's night. Pitch black. Midnight. Fuck. Was it that long? At some point, another police officer would have done something. It's L.A. There would have been four helicopters behind them or something.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's fuck, we need the Air Force. You know, God damn. No, you just need Optimus.
So that movie was in 2007. It actually scores a 7.1 on IMDb. For Rotten Tomatoes, just for comparison's sake, critic score 57%, audience score is 85%.
Ooh, that's a lot of nostalgia, I bet.
Yeah. It's the highest rated on Rotten Tomatoes, so.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on. Oh, here we go. Part 2, Revenge of the Fallen. This one came out a couple years later. This was written again by Orsi and Kurtzman. But now there's also another writing credit for Aaron Kruger. Aaron Kruger, he's done some other really good movies. Arlington Road, Scream 3. Some other ones.
I like Scream 3.
Yeah, he did The Ring, Ring 2, Skeleton Key, The Brothers Grimm. So, okay. And we're actually going to see his work not only in this one, but he carries over. He wrote Dark of the Moon and Age of Extinction. So. Okay. And so he got his feet wet in this movie, but we'll get into the writing aspect later on.
Everybody shits on Revenge of the Fallen.
Rightfully so.
So we're going to start off right with the shitting. Pick one.
Only one? Okay. The first one I have written down here was Sam's parents.
Oh, shit.
As endearing. Okay, they were endearing in the first movie, right? Yeah. They were tolerable. They had nice scenes, comedic scenes in the first one. But in this movie, holy shit, were they, especially the mom, they were just over the top, just, what's the...
Parody of parenting.
I guess, I don't know what happened, but it's here's the thing. I touched on this a while ago, but during this movie, this was the writer's strike. So they had to make do with what they had. I would assume that on this one, they said, you two, be funny.
Ham it up.
Yeah, ham it up and do whatever. Make extra scenes for this. So, but man, as good as characters they were in the first movie, they just like went total downhill slide fast in this movie. I just
couldn't stand it. There's one thing that was more annoying than the parents, it's and I'm an asshole. I like stereotypical characters, but the twins got so old so fast that if they were on my screen any longer, I would have gouged my eyes out.
Yeah.
Oh. I like the fight scene when they're trying to stand up to Devastator, but building up to that, I had already lost like sympathy. Like I didn't care. I didn't have anything invested in these characters.
Did you lose one of your gold teeth?
Oh shit.
Because this robot had a gold tooth. Yeah, I was going to put the Autobot twins as the number one, but I figured I figured that'd be high up on your list. So I said the parents have they've got to go. They got to go. And I think a lot of people would agree with us on that. This out of all the cons in the movie, I think those two,
the parents and the twins.
Oh, good lord.
Yeah. Let's liven it up.
All right.
What's the first thought you think of when you think of the word Devastator?
From this movie?
Yeah.
Balls.
Those are 15 seconds that I would overlook because of the overall... You know, for the...
Wait. Do you have this on your pros list or your con list?
Let me explain.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You explained that it's hard for the character designs in the first movie. Again, these are robots that you're trying to make real pieces into real life.
Right.
I actually liked the end result of Devastator. I like that they struggled to transform together and that they were still struggling to move and that it was...
Because they're so big.
Yeah. And it was a big gestalt. It wasn't just like another guy the size of Megatron. Like this was like a legit... You could tell that's a big motherfucker as opposed to all the other Decepticons and Autobots fighting. So in that aspect, when I saw Devastator on the screen and then interviews post-movie when I was getting information... That they fried so many servers trying to make this actually happen on the big screen, I can give it respect. So I like the fact that for the lack of holy shit, they forgot so many nameless Decepticons in part one. Everybody that watches Transformers knows who Devastator is. Mm-hmm. So that kind of balanced out the lack of part one, before
part two came out, Revenge of the Fallen, everybody was saying, here's what I want to see, blah, 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 blah. And it was always, on every single list, it was Devastator and Dinobots.
Yes.
That was the two things that everybody had on their fucking wish list for this movie. And, so we got Devastator, air quotes.
Yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, it's better than him as a tank in the first movie.
Yeah.
Which I think they've gone back and renamed him from the first movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he's Devastator anymore.
He's Bone Crusher, I think.
Something like that. Yeah I don't know.
Now, I just had Devastator on my good list. The bad list... is him getting destroyed by one shot by a human tank that no one even knows exists except like five people.
Yeah, it was like a railgun cannon or something like that, some experimental laser thing from the sky.
Yeah, that, not so much the fact that he got killed, well that too, that he got killed by one shot, but that's a kind of villain that I would have preferred to see the rest of the if Optimus is already busy. Mm-hmm. He's got Megatron and the Fallen on his plate. The rest of the guys, that would have been a fun battle to have them...
A little B-side.
Yeah, have them fight Devastator as opposed to just the twins knocking out a couple of his teeth and then he climbs up the mountain, poops up all these old bricks, and then gets shot, killed by one shot.
Yeah.
So, positive that I got to see him on the screen. Negative is the lack of the use they got out of all that effort they put him on the screen.
You know, another negative, you just mentioned it, poop and balls and stuff. Robot bodily functions and flatulence. That was a recurring theme in this whole movie. There was, the blue guy, Willie?
Yeah.
The remote RC? Truck, yeah. He transformed and he farted. You know, there was...
No, Jetfire farted a parachute.
That was the second fart. There's two farts in this movie. There was a lot of, like, drooling and goop and everything else.
Like you wouldn't drool if you were 5 feet away from Megan Fox.
That's not the point. The point is there's too much fluidity coming out of these robots.
Yeah.
I think one, like, someone got ripped. Like, I think it was Optimus. He ripped someone.
Dude, that's on my good side, dude. Again, going back to, dude, 1986 is on a fucking golden pedestal covered with diamonds.
Right.
The last time, I hadn't had a reaction in part two that hardcore since the reaction of watching Optimus Prime die in the movie, in the cartoon. Him standing up
to your words carefully.
Him standing up to Megatron, Starscream, and Blackout, ripping out Blackout's head. You'll never stop at one. God, he takes out Star. He starts whooping ass. He damn near goes Super Saiyan. So to have Megatron stab him in, like, ironically, stabbing him in the back, blowing his matrix out, right, his spark, and then just watching him, like, just tilt to the side like a brick and just doomp. That it, dude, that even watch that scene, that entire scene, that whole fight scene from the warehouse building up to the in the woods, to me, it still holds up 10 years later.
Now, as far as pros for me goes, Prime versus Decepticons. That's what I have. That one scene. There's not a whole lot of goodness that come for me that came out of this movie. That was a really cool scene. That was it was classic Optimus Megatron, Optimus Decepticons fighting. So yeah, it's gonna appease the fanboys, you know. So
too soon in the franchise, assuming we didn't know that there was gonna be seven more coming in our lifetime at least. Was it too soon to actually already kill Optimus?
I thought so. Because I remember thinking when I saw that, I was like, well, here's the Optimus trope. Because and almost ever since the movie, I think there's in each series or whatever he's in, there's some kind of death of Optimus. It's like a trope. Like, he dies in every single thing he's in. And I was like, okay, well.
Or we begin with him already dead.
Or something. Yeah, something to where he dies and comes back. And this is the second movie in. Maybe, again, they didn't know how it was going to go. And they said, let's do it, you know. Yeah. Granted, in the end of the movie, they've already taken care of that.
Especially after part two, not that we're trying to jump ahead on purpose. I think after the second movie, Bay starts flip-flopping. He's like, nah, I'm not coming back for number three. And then he does number three. Nah, I'm not going to come back for number four. They wheel in the dump truck full of money. All right, fuck it. I'm not doing number five. Well, guess what? There's three more coming at least. Yeah. And he might not be writing them all, but he's right there. So he's like the constant, even though he himself says he's not going to be.
Yeah. He likes that money. Yeah, that's
Who doesn't?
So, you know, another thing about that, not to veer off too much, but by this point, like, the amount of time of his life that he's spent on this, by now, he's probably now getting into the flow of things as the movies go on.
Yeah.
Like, the first two movies, I'm sure they were just, like, paychecks to him. But then after the second one, maybe now he's like,
got the rhythm.
Yeah, now he's like, okay, wait a minute, I have something here, I got a franchise.
Yeah.
So, one more pro on this one, then we'll probably move on after that. It was still fun to see Megatron and Starscream bickering back and forth. I forgot about that.
The argument on the tower?
Yeah, no, it was inside the Fallen's base, their little headquarters.
Oh, their little hatchlings were dying off.
Yeah, and there was I wish I wrote it down, but there was a back and forth between them two again. Just straight out from the cartoon into this one where it was Megatron and Starscream going back and forth.
No, the scene that I liked that stood out to me was after they'd already killed Optimus and they're looking for Sam. And they're on top of a building in downtown, and like Megatron pushes Starscream to the ground, and then like he had already got a new alt mode, so his like feet are like treads. Yeah. And he's like burning rubber on his chest.
I don't remember that.
I remember it vividly. Like that continued the okay, you want to be better than me, but you can't do shit, basically.
Yeah.
I have a positive. Let's see if I have another one left, dude. For the characterization of that I hated about the twins. For some reason, I found Jetfire very entertaining.
Yeah,
him being the Kermit the Frog or the Muppets that explains everything that goes on throughout the movie to make sure that you understand what's going on.
I wouldn't consider him the Kermit the Frog.
I don't know where that came from, but still, he made a good.
They had the one character trait that he was a Decepticon and he flipped sides. Mm-hmm. That was from the cartoon series, if anybody didn't know. But so there's that. Okay, I had a couple questions about this movie actually. You know, sometimes when I watch a movie, I gotta think about.
Oh shit!
Yeah, there's a scene. There's a plot device in here. There's a chick in college that was after Sam, and it turns out that she was a Decepticon. She had the robotic tail that comes out, and her tongue went out and everything. And
yeah.
So she was. People are calling her. She was a pretender. You know, there is in the toy line, there is pretender things where they look human but they're robots inside. That's all nice and fancy to throw that out there, but
no one that saw the movie really got that.
Well, besides not only that, but what the fuck happened? Like, was that the only one? Like, that seems like a pretty good device to have if you're a Decepticon.
Yeah,
you're telling me this chick is the only design that they have. Right? Wouldn't you have them, like, everywhere?
Yeah.
Right? Am I wrong on that? Like, what the hell? Like, this is a good thing to have.
That's a good device, yeah.
Yeah. No, you just, you make one to seduce this one human? What? Doesn't make any sense. Also, we mentioned him in the last movie, Lack Thereof, Soundwave debuts in this movie, but he's a satellite in space, like mm-hmm. floating around. How long has he been floating around in space as a satellite? When did he get there?
Yeah.
What's he doing up there? Is he spying on? I guess he's spying on everybody, but you'd think that'd be mentioned in the first movie, right?
Yeah.
No.
Oh, Soundwave didn't shoot any of his minions earlier when Megatron got his ass whooped?
Yeah. You failed me, Soundwave. Okay.
Okay. For me, it's we're between the parents, the twins. Devi's intestines, his balls, his genitalia. I think the biggest complaint I have about part two as a Transformers fan, if the fight scene between Optimus and Megatron in part one was hardcore and Optimus didn't want to kill him, he just wanted to defeat him and he died. It's a good 15-20 minute battle for everything. If you would have yawned long enough, you would have missed the entire fight scene between the Fallen and Optimus Prime.
Yeah.
With Meg's Bobby Heenan cheering on the side, making sure, go team, go. Like, you built this dude up as a legitimate badass for the entire movie, and in 30 seconds, that's it?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Like, that was so disappointing.
And, devil's advocate, Optimus did have, like, the God Bomber armor on, the Apex armor.
Dude, Jetfire. The Fallen's one of the original 13.
I don't know.
Like,
don't
come on.
I'm progressing with straws here, okay? Yeah, it was very anticlimactic. The whole thing was, yeah.
And that's when the catchphrases started getting kind of like annoying. It was like, yeah, I rise, you fall.
Oh yeah.
I was like, oh come on. By the fourth, man, once we get to the fourth one, I'm gonna rail on it. But yeah, dude, that's when like the catchphrases started to get a little out of hand.
And in this movie, we ended it with Megatron and Starscream got away, but Megatron. Like, he's missing.
Optimus used Megatron's own blaster against him, and he blew his own head off.
Well, parts of it. And that comes into play in the next
third movie. Yeah.
And so here we are, Dark of the Moon. Real quick. Now, that movie, Revenge of the Fallen, IMDb, that was a 6.0. So we went from, what did I say before, 7.1 down to 6. Rotten Tomatoes.
Let me guess, 24?
Critics? 19. Yeah.
Oh!
19%. Audience score is 57. So it was a big drop from 85 to 57. So now we're going to Dark of the Moon.
I'm a history buff right off the bat. I'm a huge conspiracy guy, like JFK, 9/11, Pearl Harbor, stuff like that.
All right.
You know, so like, for example, X-Men Days of Future Past, Magneto is saving JFK because JFK's a mutant.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. So he tried to curve the bullet. And it won't. So the fact that they're trying to tie in real history into like a comic book storyline, you're going to get my attention. So when you're doing the space race, that's the reason why they're trying to beat Russia to go to get to the moon, because they know that there's Transformers out there. It already, like, it wiped the slate clean. It like rinsed out the aftertaste from Transformers 2.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giving this an open mind going into the movie, and then adding in Buzz Aldrin. You know, one of the first guys to land on the moon, like, dude, you got me. Like, the inner geek in me is like all the neurons are firing. Like, give it to me. What else am I going to get from this movie? So we're already, I think, for the first 10 or 15 minutes of this movie, I feel like I'm getting back on track.
All right. You know, first of all, a little asterisk here. This was kind of like a blind spot for me for some reason, because I don't think I watched this one in the theater. Mm-hmm. And I caught bits and pieces of it when I was on FX and things like that.
If you're not mistaken, the first time you remember watching the whole thing from start to finish was recently doing this homework project.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, this happened? Oh, that happened? Wow. Case in point, I'm going to have my first pro right here. I like the opening scene on Cybertron.
Yes!
There was a fucking battle scene on Cybertron in this movie. I was like, what the... talking about the Ark, he's escaping on the Ark and this and that. And
all the missiles like circling around going...
Yeah, I was like, how did I miss this? but because that was another thing that people wanted to see from the, you know, that their wish lists of things they want to see. Cybertron, we got a glimpse of it in part one when he's telling the story about everything. But this was our first full-on like fight scene on Cybertron. And it looked really cool, too. It wasn't just half-assed or anything. This is a huge battle scene that was going on. Mm-hmm. So that's my first pro right off the bat, was just the opening.
Man, the second pro for me, besides the space geek, you can call this Dark of the Moon all you want. That's not what I'm calling this. Ultimate Doom, the three-parter from the original series of 1984, where literally that's how the Autobots hit in one of the rocket boosters. Dude, they literally pulled this almost, not almost, but they got a lot of inspiration from those three episodes. And man, it must have been, I might have seen those cartoons like a couple of weeks before I went to see this movie. So like,
this looks
another
familiar.
Example, like where it looks new, but it feels familiar.
Right.
You know, so yeah. This kind of comes out of nowhere as like the dark horse of being one of the better Transformers movies in the franchise.
Also, besides, and I do have that on my notes too, as well as the as far as a pro goes, the story itself. The story itself was actually pretty decent. And yeah, it did have traces of Ultimate Doom. Also, I had a flash of another episode called Megatron's Master Plan, which was his attempt to get the world against the Autobots and have them choose to leave the Earth. Their plan was to come back secretly. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like what happened in this movie, too. Mm-hmm. So, those two things, it was really good to see those in live action. Also, they introduced Leonard Nimoy as Sentinel Prime.
That was such a good performance.
And he's got history with Transformers. He voiced Galvatron in the 86 movie. But in this one, just the plot twist with him.
We had a bad guy go good in the second movie, but I never would have thought good guy go bad.
Yeah.
And again, that goes back to, damn, dude, Nimoy gave such a great...
He's Optimus' mentor, so you're not thinking anything negative about this guy. You know, it's just...
It's a hell of a turn, dude.
Yeah, and it worked, I think. Storyline purposes, I thought it worked out pretty good.
Yeah.
And then, I did, my last pro here is actually a pro for this movie, but it actually leads into my first con.
Okay, go for it.
So... My pro for this movie is we finally have a classic Decepticon team. We got Megatron, we got Starscream, Soundwave, Shockwave,
fucking Shockwave.
All these classic badass Decepticons, we have these in one movie, right? Perfect. I was like, great. We have notable villains, right? Decepticons, right? However,
oh no.
My first con of this movie, all the Decepticons died. What the fuck? Every single last one of them.
I think this falls back on the fact of, yeah, Michael's not coming back to do number two or number three. Like, oh, okay, he's here, but nah, this is it. He's already made it clear.
But he's always been flippant about killing
off
characters.
After three, fuck it, I'm doing Ninja Turtles.
No, even in the first one, Jazz, whoosh, rips in half. Yeah. Rips in half Jazz. And then I'm sure someone died in the second. Oh, RC. RC debuted in the second one, killed her off.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's more examples, but this is the first time they actually had, you know, well, Starscream, he was there from the first movie. He probably got taken out by humans, of course. Soundwave and then Shockwave. I mean, they had cool deaths, but even then. And then we finally got another Megatron versus Optimus fight. Mm-hmm. Well, it was Optimus.
Oh,
it was Optimus,
my,
Megatron.
One of my pros on the list is Megatron's no one's bitch.
Yeah,
like he literally came to Optimus's aid before Sentinel killed him, just so Megatron can kill Sentinel because nobody kills Optimus but Megatron. Right. And even Megatron got killed by Optimus again. Like, God damn it! Like, it all looks cool in the beginning, but then at the end, you're like, ah, man, just too cool.
Is that a thing that we should talk about right now? I was going to save it for later, but this series, this particular franchise of the Transformers, Optimus is a gangster in these series, man. He gets like straight up, like, first he's trying to preserve life, and now he can turn another cheek, and now he's just like straight up murdering people. Like, like Megatron, he like flat out kills Megatron in cold blood, or fluid, I guess, I don't know. But,
yeah, cold steel.
Yeah, there you go. Like, right? He just pulled his gun up to his face.
No, he walked up to Sentinel and was like, nah.
That's what it was, yeah.
Like, I was expecting Optimus to turn the gun to the side.
Right, yeah.
Like,
you know? The Glock on him.
Yeah. Good lord.
And then it continued in the next movie, too. But anyway.
Yeah, my biggest flaw for me, for all the positives you said about the band's finally together, there's not a lot to remember about this movie.
Yeah.
It's not a memorable movie. It's good now that I saw it. now that I remember, but it's not something that's already on my head. Like, oh, dude, when you're talking about Transformers movies, dude, you need to watch Dark of the Moon.
It's like, I think what you, yeah. Well, to, I kind of agree with you, but on that, I don't want to say it was bad per se, but I think to what your point is there's no, like,
it's not awesome, it's not shitty, it's just
okay,
there.
In these past two movies, we could point out a scene. Mm-hmm. Other than the opening scene on Cybertron, I can't think of an actual scene that's holy shit. Look at that. Yeah. Maybe it's I don't know. That's what I got out of it. But because it was good, I mean, I can't.
Now looking back at it, that you've seen the whole thing from start to finish.
Well, let me finish this off here. There was one scene that I have under my cons. That was the rescue of Carly. Megan Fox is gone in this movie.
It's Worthington or something?
Something like that. I don't know. But she's Carly. And, you know, if you're fans of the cartoon from the 80s, Carly is was Spike's girlfriend, went on to become Daniel's mom, mm-hmm. right, in the cartoon series. So they brought her in the series. But there's a point where she gets captured, right, and they have to rescue her in this building. Yeah. That whole thing took way too long. That was... I was losing track of what was going on elsewhere because they were spending so much time on the rescue of Carly.
Mm-hmm. Soundwave was a satellite in part two. He's a SLS AMG Mercedes in part three. Which one would you rather have?
Neither. I don't know. Is this...
You want him walking around as an iPod Shuffle? Because it's music, man.
Maybe the car. But although, the car. I don't know, because the satellite, like, it's at least communications.
Yeah.
Man, Soundwave, it makes more sense, I guess.
I think now that we, after this, after we got more of more Transformers cartoons throughout this franchise in between the movies, dude, what, the drone from Transformers Prime would have fit perfectly in this movie. In this,
yeah, I like what they real did time. I like what they did with Soundwave in Prime.
Yeah,
that was good.
Oh, Worthington, is she better or worse than Megan Fox?
Oh, she's worse.
it only took one movie.
I'll say this: Sam Shia, same old shit with him. Mm-hmm. Overacting.
Man up by the third movie. He kind of does towards the end. Again, that scene's way too long. But he finally grows a set.
Yeah,
took him only three movies.
Well, because he finds out that what's his face is in line with the Decepticons. But yeah, the yelling and overacting by him, it's too much. I'm glad he didn't come back anything after this. Also, in the second movie, didn't he want, a normal life? He wanted to go to college, and he didn't want anything to do. He kept Bumblebee mm-hmm. in a garage. Mm-hmm. Optimus said, I need your help, Sam. And he's Sam's no, I want to go to college. Fuck you, pretty much. And then in this movie, that's all he's doing is bragging about how he saved the world, and I got to get back in here and help. Let me help. And come on, dude.
Make up your mind.
Yeah, what the fuck? So those were some things about that.
That's part three for me in a nutshell, dude. Unless you got something.
Part three for me, Dark of the Moon, it seems like it kind of segues out of the first two movies' storyline aspects and it segues into a whole new trilogy of movies. Because in Dark of the Moon, a big plot point that carries over is Chicago.
Got destroyed.
Yeah. And again, when I was watching Age of Extinction for the first time, I was like, what happened? Because there were signs everywhere that says, remember Chicago, and everybody hates Transformers. Everybody's scared of Transformers now. I was like, what did I miss? It was kind of hazy for me. What was going on? I don't think I covered this. Dark of the Moon, IMDb 6.3, Rotten Tomatoes 35%, 55%. So it went up a little bit mm-hmm. for that from, obviously,
from Revenge. Fox.
So we're moving on to Age of Extinction. And again, I told you, the Aaron Kruger guy, he came on board for part two, and then part Dark of the Moon, and now Age of Extinction. He's been the core writer for these movies, so at least it's had a single revision.
Yeah,
and you can tell, I was watching it, rewatching all these, they are making sense storyline wise.
Yeah. All right. So before we get into Age of Extinction, we've already got one trilogy down. We're starting from scratch. Kind of. It's a reboot / sequel, because how the hell did Mark Wahlberg fit into this? Yeah, Mark Wahlberg in this. This is 10 years or 5 or 10 years after the battle in
I don't think it's that long. I think it was only a short time.
How is your anticipation for the fourth film with the three already come and gone?
I remember watching the trailers for everything before it came out. I was like, oh, here we go. but it was okay, well, maybe they are trying something different now, because no Shia LaBeouf, no Megan Fox, no nothing else. We got new characters coming in. So yeah, let's give this a shot. Let's see what happens. Dinobots were a big thing that they pointed out in the trailers and everything that you saw Optimus riding on the back of Grimlock.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I was cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That sounds good.
Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay.
So give me a pro.
Okay, a pro. There were no, I'm using quotations, over-the-top quirky characters in this movie. In fact, they even killed off the comedy relief. T.J. Miller, his buddy. Like, I was thinking he was...
Right when he was about to get annoying, he's gone.
Yeah.
Yes!
I was like, okay, we're on a different path now. This is a different tone. Now, you can even say that started in the last movie. Because it was a little bit... Once the war happened in Dark of the Moon, I think the tone...
The comedy's gone.
Because it's actually... Yeah. If you go back to Dark of the Moon, it's like two movies. Like, it's Sam like trying to find a job and meeting John Malkovich and everything else. And then it switches from the war, like whenever when they leave Earth.
It's almost like Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, I guess. It's like, yeah, because it's like, that was another thing about Dark of the Moon was now we're starting to see like longer movies. These are like 2.5, almost 3-hour movies.
Yeah.
So like the second half of Dark of the Moon, what focuses on the Decepticons taking over Chicago pretty much, and then the Autobots coming back and saving the day. But it's already too late, kind of, sort of.
Yeah.
We're
just missing that episode after Ultimate Doom where you see the first 5 minutes and the Autobots are, like, helping repair buildings and bridges and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much. And they're in hiding now. And that's where we start off with Age of Extinction, that all the Autobots they're hiding. Mm-hmm. And...
in plain sight.
Yeah. Or as a rusted-out truck inside a movie theater.
Yeah.
Because that's where you want to hide out as a truck.
Yeah.
But it was cool to see the old 1980s
classic
pickup truck that he's found in. And at first I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, why is he like that? What is going on in this thing? And it turns out that he intercepted a message. No. He found out that they're being hunted. Mm-hmm. Like, there's another group of the government that's actually going out. They're supposed to be hunting Decepticons. But there's a rogue faction that's actually... Just
taking everything.
They're taking out Autobots, too, because they don't trust any robot, right? So Optimus found out about that, and he transmitted to all the Autobots to go in hiding, don't say anything to anybody, pretty much.
Yeah.
Every robot for themselves, pretty much. Because they're all in different spots. They're not a team anymore. They're just kind of on the run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we find out that Ratchet, survivor from the first trilogy, he's
killed off.
Yeah. By Lockdown. Now, do you want to say something about Lockdown?
If you want to talk about the sexiest Lamborghini I have ever seen, I will pay top money to buy a transforming Lamborghini. Lockdown was probably one of my favorite characters from the entire Transformers animated series. That's a brand new character they made from scratch for that series.
Okay.
A bounty hunter that isn't about being an Autobot. He is not about being a Decepticon. He's about getting paid and having mantles, trophies, weapons, something to remember all of his kills by. Let's straight up hunter. You know? So adding him
his
into this...
His face turns into a sniper rifle.
Seeing him in this movie is, for me, was like the ultimate breath of fresh air. That we're going into stuff that you'd like a casual fan would be like, holy crap, that Lamborghini. Ugh. But as a hardcore fan, I'm like, holy shit, they're pulling Lockdown. Like, that gives hope that they'll bring out some, like, rare shit. You know, from the Transformers lore to this movie, and I think they pulled it off gloriously. I was ashamed that I don't want to jump the gun here, but quality over quantity. I think he's been the best catalyst in every movie.
This catalyst,
yeah, okay. He's best villain, better than Megatron, better than Fallen, better than Devastator.
He's done more.
He's done, dude. He killed off a human being.
Yeah.
A face human being that no one has ever done in all three movies. Like, he got enough screen time to know that that's someone that you need to care about watching a movie. And for him to get killed off 15 minutes in or 20 minutes in, okay, this is serious business.
Yeah.
And it set the tone for if the third movie didn't set it, the damn near half the city's destroyed. This guy, like, willing to kill humans, all right, this is good. This is no longer a parody of an 80s cartoon. This is its own franchise for 2014.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I fucking love Lockdown.
And to piggyback off that, another pro that I have for this one, other than the overall tone of the movie, was the character designs.
Mm-hmm.
That was a con. That was a con for me in the first movie, and I told you it'd come back. Here, full circle, Lockdown's one of them. I mean, the design, you know, you could, and the reason I'm saying design specifically is because, like, in the early days, it was like just, it looked like kind of like wireframes and just single, it wasn't, everything, nothing was really fleshed out as far as individually designing of a character, where Lockdown is his own character. Now we have other Autobots that are coming in. Besides besides just Optimus and Bumblebee, who we've always had really detailed designs for, these new characters they brought in, they are all fleshed out characters with designs to match them. Hound, John Goodman, hey, that was pretty good too.
Yeah, that's like, for all the positives that I liked about the character Lockdown, the way he was portrayed, dude, John Goodman was fucking gold as Hound.
Well, it's John Goodman.
I know, it's hard. And Ken Watanabe is Drift. Yeah. You know, a con on my list, a Bugatti Veyron is not a drift car. It goes 0 to 1,000 in a straight line. It does not drift.
Well, let me ask you something, because you like Drift. Like, you like the character Drift, right?
There, that's another homegrown character that was recently done in IDW for the Transformers comics. They gave him a 4-part miniseries
on how Drift. But this isn't the same Drift.
It's not the, the concept's there, but it's not the same, like, bits and pieces of everything. Like, Drift was not a samurai with Japanese accent and, that had swords and everything. Drift was a Decepticon that realized that he wanted to go on his own. For anybody that's a Transformers guy, that's like an $8 trade paperback. It's a 4-issue series, just Drift. And it's solid, dude. It's a great introduction for a brand new character into the Transformers world. So the fact that they pulled it twice, with Lockdown on the bats on the Decepticon side and with Drift on the Autobot side, I'm being more optimistic with what else they're going to pull going forward with the series.
Yeah. He was like a triple changer in this movie, right? Because he was a helicopter too.
And he was not in the book. But in this movie, he did triple change into the copter.
Yeah. Or is that their first hidden vehicles that they're in? Because Bumblebee came out as a 67 Camaro. I like that vehicle. I like that movie.
It looked nice.
It did look nice. And he went back to his, a new concept.
A new upgraded concept, like Camaro. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else? Oh, my God.
Crosshairs. The green one with the trench coat?
The Corvette,
The Stingray.
Yeah, Stingray Corvette, the first year that they brought those up.
I liked him.
As a car guy, nothing gave me more of an erection than the scene where Stinger, as a Pagani Huayra, you could hear the whistle like, wee. That's straight up like double super, that's like twin turbo, dude.
And that's a straight up real.
That's the legit sound, dude. I've seen enough car episodes of Top Gear.
Yeah.
And I've actually seen one on the road.
You seen one on the road?
Oh, yeah. Full out.
When you're in California?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Full out. Dude, in the Ojai Mountains, full out. It sounds like that, dude. Really? It's gorgeous. This movie, I was dating somebody at the time, and she saw that car and completely fell in love with it. And I was like, don't expect me to get it. That's a $1.2 million ride there.
Yeah.
You know, but dude, they really did a good job of bringing in brand new cars, and the detail on the robot modes. They're fucking awesome.
Even Galvatron.
Yeah.
Which that's a whole other story aspect as well, too. But yeah, Galvatron, he's, because Megatron died in the last movie, and they
salvaged parts.
Right.
This was like fucking Pacific Rim, where they, in the black market, they got the leftover pieces to dissect and all that shit.
And here's a con.
Go for it.
Transformium.
You want to talk about the shittiest of plot devices? God, you couldn't come up with a better name?
Programmable metal. Transformium. Come on. Yeah. And then, yeah, you said it yourself. It's a plot device. It was just bad. And just hearing people say it sounds even worse. It's one thing, I'm sure if you see it on paper, as the writers were writing it down. But then to hear actors, check out this Transformium. No.
So are My Little Ponies metal? Because that's what they transformed one of them into.
It changes.
And then in the next scene, it's a box of donuts. And then the next scene, it's a glass of water.
No, it's not only a con, it's like a huge con for me in this movie.
I think one of the biggest cons for me in this movie, again, we don't need 18 different versions of Spider-Man telling us the origin of how he got bit. I think they spent too much time introducing new human characters when they had just as many new robot characters that they could have spent more time on. I don't know how much of that is CGI. Like, we went through 35 or 40 minutes of this like 4-hour epic before we saw Optimus Prime bust out of the barn.
That's
too much fucking time,
because
dude.
It's building up Mark Wahlberg and
yeah,
and it comes back to the runtime. It's like almost 3 hours.
It was 3 hours. bananas, dude.
And I mean, me personally, I'm not a hater of Mark Wahlberg, so I give it the benefit of the doubt. A lot better. I'll give a hands over.
He's fist. A better lead than Shia.
Fuck yeah. So if they want to, if you want to spend 20 minutes building up this character and figure out who he is to build your next couple movies on, sure, I'm okay with that. Whatever. You got the time, obviously.
Yeah.
if you knew your time, your runtime was gonna be that.
Hinting back on something you mentioned earlier, hearing that Galvatron was going to be the new villain in this movie, I was like, how are they going to make this work?
Yeah.
And I think they did a damn good job. It was plausible for me. It's like, hey, this is a robot that the humans created that they have control of. Mm-hmm. Little do they know that they don't have all the control. And they explain how some of these parts corrupted the machine, and it's got the
Megatron
soul.
Is still alive.
Yeah, probably. They're trying to create a more pleasant version of Optimus, but the fucking hole in the middle. Like, algorithms, designs. Why can't we make what we want to make, how we want to make it? It's like, that's why, Dick. I love that.
And that's a pro that I have is Stanley Tucci.
Yes.
Oh my God! Of all the human characters in this whole franchise, I think that was the first guy. He wasn't over the top. He wasn't.
I think his over the topness fit the character.
He wasn't quirky. He was over the top, but he wasn't quirky. And if you've seen all Michael Bay's movies, you know what I'm talking about when I say quirky. Everybody's have some kind of character twitch.
It was his assistant that was eating the donuts in the office when they had the little jellyfish. But even he wasn't too overdone. No. Like, it was just here and there enough to add a little bit of comic relief, not for it to go overload.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, he wasn't overly evil. He wasn't overly whatever. He was just a character in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And his performance, I really enjoyed it. He had some good one-liners. He had some good delivery on a lot of lines. And, when his secretary is beating up all the Chinese dudes, he's like, oh, I love you. You know? That was fantastic. Oh, you scare me right now. Or something like that. Yeah, he had a lot of one-liners. They were really good.
The last good I have on my list, I had to save the best for last. It took only 4 movies. Grimlock, the Dinobots. Dude. I don't care what the aftermath was in the end, but just seeing them on my television, Optimus trying to talk sense into them, Optimus bitch slapping Grimlock in the fucking... Dude. Ah, loved it.
I appreciated seeing them, but again, as me, I'm a nitpicker. Yeah. I have to...
So go for it. Pick away.
As cool as it was seeing them... To me, they were just, they had no personality or anything. It was just, they were just there.
That goes back to my flaw that they spent, again, too much time on the new humans. They could have spent a little more time fleshing out some character.
Like, they didn't even say their names, I don't think.
No.
It's like, I know he's Grimlock because I'm a fan of the franchise.
I bought the toy. It said Grimlock on it. I know that's what it is.
But if you're just watching the movie. I watched it with my wife. My wife didn't know who the hell Grimlock was.
Oh,
you know, it's one of those things where you just don't know. And he has a lot of character traits that I'm sure people
He's a lovable idiot.
Yeah. That was a lovable idiot there.
Oh, no. We're getting there.
Yeah, well, maybe. Well, in Robots in Disguise, the cartoon series, he's in there, and that's Grimlock for you. Yeah. This was just stoic robots that just happened to transform into Dinobots.
Oh, I thought they were just transforming to big cars.
Oh yeah, but that's my flaw in it. But yeah, I knew they eventually had to bring him in at some point.
Yeah,
and then even then, how do you make Grimlock himself without being cartoony and gimmicky and whatnot? You know,
yeah.
So it's a damn if you do, damn if you don't type of thing. Mm-hmm. And they,
the fight scenes when they're coming in to save and he like Optimus jumps off of Grimlock's spine and they do like tag team moves.
Yeah,
dude, that was so awesome to see.
Yeah. I watched the behind-the-scenes thing, and Michael Bay was talking about how he was scouting locations, and one in China that he was in, it was like the apartments, and then the very across the street was the forest.
Yeah.
And he's like, right then and there, I knew there was some kind of scene that I was going to have, that I was going to have them running down. And sure enough, we see Grimlock sliding down and running towards with Optimus on his back and everything. And I mean, it was really cool.
Visual.
Yeah, to see all that, and to see all the other Autobots like hopping on their backs and all ganging up on another flaw, I guess, in this movie was as far as Decepticons, since you killed them all off in the last movie, there's a reincarnated Megatron as the Galvatron. Mm-hmm. And you have some drones, pretty much. You have
a bunch of nameless bots.
You have Stinger and...
I like that they made a secondary rivalry in the movie. So Optimus is trying to fight Lockdown, but there's actually someone for Bumblebee to despise.
That was a funny scene. That was a funny scene when Bumblebee's in there and he sees
the upgraded version. Yeah, and them actually fighting it out. And in the beginning of that fight, seeing that Stinger's the better of him.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, this is good. Like, actually have Bumblebee work up to actually be the guy to fight somebody big,
yeah.
Which we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, because the second toy that they make the most of, other than Optimus in these movies, is Bumblebee. And all the little kids are buying all these Bumblebee toys, and all the damn adults that used to be kids are the ones buying Optimus.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where all he did in the first three movies was be subservient to Sam.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't, I mean, he had some cool moments and some funny comic relief and this and that. Mm-hmm. And again, the example I just made, him meeting Stinger in the factory,
mm-hmm.
Hearing them talk about the new and improved Bumblebee, he's like, what? And his eyes get all sad and everything. Yeah, yeah, it was really, really funny stuff there. I think some other stuff I had on here was the editing. It was way too long.
Oh, yeah.
They could definitely benefited from trimming the fat a little bit from this movie. And speaking of that, the daughter. This was, you asked me if the last chick was worse than Megan. This chick right here, she was the worst one, bar none.
Is it telling that this new movie last night doesn't have her?
That we know of.
Well, we're like a month away and we've got 9 different TV commercials and 2 different trailers and I have not seen this chick in any of it.
Yeah.
She could be a cameo, but dude, I agree completely. This chick...
I could be way off in this. I could be way off. But her name in this movie was Tessa, uh-huh. Right? If you saw that one trailer for last night when Optimus is chained up.
Oh, and the Quintesson is named Tessa.
Right? Quintessa.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where they're going with this. Does something happen to her and she, whatever. I'm hoping that's not the case. I'm hoping this is a coincidence. But does that. The boyfriend, the movie, he was.
Yeah, hey, let's take 15 seconds to show that this isn't statutory rape. I was like, come on.
No. And then him being a dick to the dad. I was like, come on, man, just punch him in the face. I don't know. So some of those Bayisms of the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Mark Wahlberg, he hemmed it up a couple times also himself. But like him getting the gun, hey, I got to get me one of these or whatever he said. I don't know. But Agent Extinction, I enjoyed it. It wasn't bad to me. It was long.
Yeah.
Oh, that one scene with the chick. She's hiding next to the car in between the Galvatron and Optimus fight. And they're like, run! Run!
Oh,
and
she's
just...
She's hiding behind the Cadillac.
And then she gets in the back seat. What the fuck? Fucking idiot. You deserve to die. Jesus.
Dude, now that you mention it, that is fucking long. Because there's a lot of set pieces, a lot of scenes in there. Galvatron gets whooped by Optimus just for Lockdown to come out and shoot the shit out of him, and then they
Optimus is damn near
that long ass scene just to break Optimus out.
Movie. Actually, on that particular moment, on that, there was a lot of setup for last night in spaceship when Lockdown is explaining that he's sitting here from his creators to come get they want him back.
Yeah.
And then we get on a spaceship, he's locked up, and then he sees all... Well, he says, these are the other knights.
Yeah.
You were the last knight I needed to get. Come on. I mean, this is a lot of foreshadowing for last night. And so that kind of sets up what all this kind of means. But yeah, when he gets captured and the first set piece on the spaceship... Actually, I was watching my wife, I paused it. I was like, okay, I need to take a break. Because I was like...
It's a lot.
That was like an hour and a half, almost 2 hours in that movie. And I knew there was like another hour and a half left in that movie. I was like, so we paused it, we stopped it, and we got something to eat and came back. And
wow.
Yeah, it's a marathon mode, man.
Yeah.
You have to pace yourself on that shit. So, but yeah, this Age of Extinction, it was a nice continuation of Dark of the Moon because of the fallout. It was a good fallout movie from Dark of the Moon with the whole Chicago thing and everybody's afraid of them and... in the government, Kelsey Grammer, he's in there. He's in the movie too.
You want to talk about Optimus being an OG? Optimus straight up wanted to kill a human.
Yeah,
just like Lockdown killed TJ Miller. He's like, he's gonna die, and he wound up shooting him. I was like, dude, what are you? For parents that could complain about what our role models are teaching our kids. And from the very first movie, Optimus wants that everyone has the same right. To like the fourth one, he's actually doing the one thing he swore he would never do.
Yeah.
He's kill a human. It's like by part five, he's going to wind up killing like a country and shit.
Hey, that's the storyline going on. In, All Hail Optimus. That was a storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's something that also Optimus does in every single movie. He rips some kind of appendage off of a Decepticon. First one, he ripped off Bonecrusher's head in the freeway scene.
Yeah.
The second one, he ripped someone's spine out. I can't remember.
Was it Ravage? It was Megatron's spine with the axe. He pulled the head off, and the spine was connected to it.
He ripped open.
Ravage.
No, Ravage. He pulled the spine off.
That was Bumblebee. He was using it to fight one of the.
He either rips something off of somebody, or he stabs and like tears like them in half or something. He does that in all the movies.
And then part four, he sticks the knife through, and then Lockdown pukes all that Jaeger, and then lifts the sword up,
cuts him in half. Yeah, so yeah, don't fuck with Optimus. That should be a tagline in this franchise.
So we go into number five. Optimus is floating in space.
Yes,
he went looking at the end of part four.
Yeah, that's how
looking for the creators. He's out there floating.
He says, they want to find me. I'll come to them.
Mark Wahlberg has a pet Dinobot in the junkyard.
In the trailer, we saw it.
Yeah. I think this is where we're going to get the personality of Grimlock's, like...
Although, I don't know about that, because in the end of the last movie, he says, you're free to go, and all the Dinobots run away. I was like, wait a minute.
Maybe Grimlock didn't want to leave.
I was like, wait a minute. I'm thinking this, watching the movie. I'm not talking about the trailer. Yeah. The movie, I'm like, wait a minute. You just let like five huge fucking metal Dinobots or
the size of Astrodomes
run loose in China. I don't know if that was such a
Dimao. Dimao.
Yeah. I don't know if that was such their wisest idea.
Nope.
No. So
number five, we have Megatron, but how is Megatron not Galvatron?
Yeah, because Galvatron got away.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking
who finally was Walker.
Walker did voice Galvatron. So I'm assuming there's going to be some kind of reformatting sequence going back into Megatron's body.
That's the only main question I have to tie everything together. Like, I'm pretty optimistic for this movie. You're giving us Hot Rod. After five movies, we're finally going to get a Hot Rod. Even though it feels like Bumblebee in this movie verse has taken Hot Rod's place, as if Optimus were to die, Bumblebee could be the next, like,
I don't see Hot Rod making out of this movie. There's
really
come on, look. I just talked about how many characters are just die left and right.
Would you be cool seeing Bumblebee as the next Prime? I mean, we had comic books where they split the team up.
If this was 5 years ago, maybe. But now, after watching Prime and Robots in Disguise and all these other shows, and it's like that's for this medium of TV and movies. I could see it. I mean, he's your second most popular, if not the most popular Autobot.
Yeah.
But in the movie-wise, I can't see him leading unless they fix the voice. Because, come on. He was fixed in part one. And then part two...
He's back to normal. Yeah.
Or back to whatever. So, and they never fixed it since. So, I don't know. I mean, it's a nice gimmick, so I guess that's why. But, I mean, come on. You're advanced robots. You can't fix the fucking voice thing. Whatever. Yeah, so there's a lot of shit going on in the Last Night promos that we've been seeing.
Haven't seen a lot of them because I want to be surprised. And I've stayed away from like Transformers websites that are posting pictures and theories and all this other stuff because I want to be surprised.
And the thing about Hot Rod being in there is I've learned from these past four movies that just because like a
fan favorite
Transformer is in there doesn't necessarily mean anything. Devastator.
Oh, yeah.
Even Soundwave to a certain extent. There are some others I'm drawing a blank on right now, but just like design wise, I'm not digging him too much. He just looks like a gunmetal gray and red version of Bumblebee. Like,
I want the paint job. You have to have the flames.
Where's the flames? Where's the pipes logo on the side? Something, some kind of resemblance to what we know of Hot Rod, but
maybe towards the end.
Maybe.
You know, a lot of people bitched about RoboCop at the beginning because he was all black. If you watch the new RoboCop movie, it pays off if you watch the beginning of the whole RoboCop right. franchise from the 80s because it does go back to it. Yeah. But you had to watch it. Don't be the little bitch and just complain just because you don't see it in the beginning.
But that's what we do.
Yeah, that's what we do. Yeah.
So there's that. Now, for this movie, Aaron Kruger, who's written these past two or three movies, he's not in here anymore. Ooh. So we have a new writing team on board, and this new writing team is on board for the foreseeable future, because in between Age of Extinction and last night, Hasbro announced that they're doing a Hasbro universe, a shared universe of the movies, and they're having the same writing team bounce off of each other on how they're doing everything, and so they're going to be in last night. The writing team is going to be for this one, the Bumblebee movie, and Transformers 6 and 7. So they're all going to be doing this for a while. Mm-hmm. Some of these writers, they worked on Iron Man. So, and there was a few other ones that they worked on. The head writer, something Goldsman, Akiva Goldsman, he's credited for Batman and Robin, Batman Forever, iRobot,
okay,
The Da Vinci Code, and Angel and Demons, Beautiful Mind, Practical Magic, Lost in Space from the 90s, Fifth Wave, which is kind of a shitty sci-fi movie. He also, for the new movie coming out, the Stephen King movie, The Dark Tower.
Ooh,
He's responsible for that one. So,
I want to see that movie.
He's also one of the producers of the whole Hasbro cinematic universe. So he's...
And for people that are casually Transformers fans, what is the Hasbro universe?
Well, this is going to consist of Transformers, Visionaries, ROM, and Mask. G.I. Joe is conspicuous by their absence, but I can't imagine them not being able to toss a military faction, which we've had for the last four movies, in the Transformers movie. I can't. It's easy money, I would think, but there's no mention of G.I. Joe anywhere. So,
I would just hate it if Optimus Prime gets his ass beat by The Rock, because that's the cool thing to do. The Rock beats everyone up.
Yeah, true.
Fucking Roadblock.
But Mask, I can see that.
We've got glimpses of what the Transformers could look like in Mask form when they had like
that was in part three, Dark of the Moon,
where Bumblebee had like the weapons and stuff coming out. He was still in robot form, but he had shit come out. It was like, holy crap, Mask.
Yeah, and I think the rumor was like for Mask and ROM, they are going to take Transformium or whatever. They're going to take stuff from these movies, and that's their way of getting like the technology,
like ROM finds another piece of a cube
or something like that. Yeah, but that's how they get the technology for the Mask vehicles, you know. Okay. So, which I'm actually kind of curious about the Mask thing. I'm kind of curious to see how they pull that off.
Yeah.
So we'll see, because Mask is it's so weird, because these aren't like Transformers is like worldwide.
It's established.
No, they've been relevant.
Yeah,
they've never really gone away. Mask, Visionaries, ROM, like...
That's like, if you weren't in the 80s, you probably weren't...
And Visionaries is like it's
the rarest of the rare. Well, like, the most... It's not rare, it's the most...
It's obscure.
Obscure.
But there was like, it was science and sorcery. It was two of those things. So now you're going to bring in sorcery to this universe? Like, I don't know. That part I'm worried about. And I'm sure some of these writers are sweating bullets about how to get all this shit in here. But, That's kind of where... Now, going back to the last night, that's just something that just looks like it's all over the place. Because there were, like... We see it on there where they're fighting in World War II and...
Against the Nazis.
Yeah, and there's, like, Knights of the Old Table, Round Table shit, you know, with the swords and King Arthur shit like that, you know? And
I'm hoping, you know, because, like, for example, we got the throwback of Ultimate Doom in Part 3.
Yeah.
I want to say it's called Hearts of Steel. There was a small Transformers comic book line where it was old school. Like Optimus was like a railroad train, and they took a lot of old elements from that time. Right. If that's a throwback to that, I'd like to see how that would look on the big screen.
Well, and I think we're gonna get something like that, because there's a promotional still poster of Bumblebee, like a darkish bluish grayish color Bumblebee. You can recognize him on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And he's got some Gatling guns on him and shit, but he's like in front of a burning Nazi building.
Cool.
So, and you know, I was like, what the fuck? And then, but I was thinking about it like, okay, storyline wise, in the movies, if you think about it for a second, we know, because we know about Megatron being
Frozen
in the Arctic. How long has Bumblebee been here?
Yeah.
This is a war for millions of years on Cybertron. When did Bumblebee get here? Now, there were some other Autobots, like I think Hound, Drift.
And Hot Rod.
Well, we're going to find out about that. But the ones that have already been established from Age of Extinction. I think they're going to incorporate them in the same thing because we don't know how they came here.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones like Optimus, the ones from the first movie, Optimus, Jazz Ratchet, is dead. Ironhide.
Ratchet's dead. Ironhide's dead.
Yeah, those we know they came there.
They just got there.
But we don't know anything about these other guys. I think from
Jetfire, they explained in part two that he'd been there for a long time.
Revenge of the Fallen had... They said there was another shipment that came in. There's another space shuttle that came in. That's how they were able to get out from Dark of the Moon. But we know about those. But the other ones, we don't know how long they've been here. So once I connected the dots on that, I was like, oh, okay. So we're going to... That's what's going to go on. That's how we're going to explain what's going on with this. So,
and if that leads into the solo Bumblebee movie, where that's how... The end of the Bumblebee movie is how he loses his voice and how he turns into... How he ends up at the lot, basically, you know?
Because I think the Bowman movie is supposed to take place in the 80s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, should be good. I mean, I would imagine.
I'm more optimistic for this movie than I am for some of the movies we've seen before.
Hopefully it's not 3 hours. But it probably will be.
The problem with if you're going to watch it at the theater, you're going to get at least, 6 movie trailers that are 3 minutes each. And then you're going to get the obligatory theater promotion commercials like, oh, this is how we have so many colors in XD. And don't forget to go buy a Coke.
Dude.
So 35 minutes before the movie starts, you've already gotten 35 minutes worth of shilling.
We went to see Alien Covenant.
And there was only one
fucking trailer. I was like, all right, cool. Let's get this all going. You know, I don't know if it was a glitch or they didn't mean to do that or what. I don't mind it.
I remember going to a special attraction. They showed... it was Hunger Games, the Mockingjay Part 1 and 2 together.
Right.
And but this was the first time you were seeing Part 2.
Right.
But it was a special attraction. There were no commercials, no trailers.
Right.
6 o'clock, the first movie started, and bam, you were already watching it.
Right.
So the last movie I went to see was probably Power Rangers. That was like 6 different trailers plus all the obligatory Cinemark stuff. Right. So depending what you're watching or where you're watching it will depend how many trailers you're getting. The shorter the better, because I want to get into it. Like,
because
know how long it's going to be. It's not about what you're spending.
This day and age, everybody just goes on YouTube and watch trailers. Yeah. Like, it's very rare for me to see a trailer at the movie theater that I haven't already seen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe they should start cutting back down. Maybe one or two at the most. Mm-hmm. But, all right, so enough of that. One final thing here. I told you this before we started recording.
Yeah.
I want to rank these things.
This is easy.
So we got 4 movies that have been out that we can actually, we talked about that we know.
86 is off the table. That's on a level above all.
Yeah, it's separate. Yeah. So we're going to rank Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Dark of the Moon, Age of Extinction in order from our personal favorite to worst that we don't like.
I'll make it easy. Revenge of the Fallen is the very fallen.
Yeah.
Revenge is the bottom.
Yeah.
Revenge is the bottom. Just for nostalgia purposes alone. And for the most part, I think the movie still holds up. The first Transformers movie is on the top of the list. There's positives in Eggs of Extinction. Dark of the Moon's a literal dark horse. Like, if you don't watch it, you'll forget how good it can be.
Mm-hmm. And you need to see that one to get the whole...
So I would have Transformers. I would have number one first.
Mm-hmm.
I would have Dark of the Moon second.
Mm-hmm.
I would have Age of Extinction at a very close third, surprisingly. And somewhere between like a bunch of chick flicks, right on the bottom, is Revenge of the Fallen.
For the sake of conversation, I would love to disagree with some of those. But I'm gonna second you, man. Part one is the first. Because if that movie didn't work at all, we wouldn't be sitting here right now.
Oh, hell no.
So number one for sure. Number three because, I didn't realize how good that movie actually was. And then, like I said, you have to watch part three to get part four.
Yeah.
And then they only use the shit fest that is Revenge of the Fallen as as the very bottom of that. So.
Yeah. That's it, man. I think we covered all the bases.
I think we did too, here
fumbling trying to finish this goddamn Bumblebee transformation.
Yeah.
But, dude, this was... this turned out exactly like I thought it would.
Hour and a half?
Yeah. It was good.
All right. So, I think that's going to... Call it a wrap on this episode.
Got it. It only took an hour and a half.
All right, Chris. Well, I think we did good here. So thanks for doing this little episode with me.
Oh, yeah. It felt good to go back to our roots.
Right.
Not have to look at a camera. I could actually look at you and talk to you.
Yeah.
You ugly mug.
Yeah.
This was fun. Yeah. This was good.
I think this worked out pretty good. So, and if you're still with us, thank you so much for sticking by. And hopefully you were kind of talking along with us and putting your two cents in with what we were saying. And maybe if you agreed or disagreed with our ranking of the movies, feel free to let us know. Again, go back to our social media and shoot us a message or even email it at popculturewine@gmail.com.
Yeah.
And there you go. And if you have any other suggestions or topics for us, we'll be glad to listen to them.
Speaking of which, what's next on the pipeline?
I don't know.
You don't know? Fuck! We'll figure something out.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's a new Spider-Man coming out. Maybe we can do something on Spider-Man?
There's only 5 movies to watch.
What about this format? I thought we just...
This actually did work, though. Yeah. We'll give it a shot.
Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
It's going to be tough trying to find some positives on Spider-Man 3.
Oh, it's easy reason.
Oh, I can already disagree with you on there.
Oh, you son of a... Did you say Venom? I'm going to kick your ass. All right. So, thanks for tuning in, and always remember to pop your culture.
Toodles!
With the Allspark gone, we cannot return life to our planet. And fate has yielded its reward. A new world to call home. We live among its people now, hiding in plain sight, but watching over them in secret, waiting, protecting. I have witnessed their capacity for courage, and though we are worlds apart, like us, there's more to them than meets the eye. I am Optimus Prime. And I send this message to any surviving Autobots taking refuge among the stars. We are here. We are waiting.
Shed any light on the recent so-called alien activity
here? You know what? I think that if there was some sort of an alien infestation...
The government would be the first to let you know.
The government would let us know.
I mean, this is America.
Yeah. You know, that's how we know we live in a free land, because there's no secret. They'd say, hey, duck and cover. Your head is kind of a different size than it is on television.